Friday, January 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, it's almost time for voters to begin selecting presidential candidates. We go to Iowa for the latest.
The feds were sort of, I think, at first content to sit back and wait, but local and state officials grew impatient, and so did communities.
A standoff ends at a U.S. government facility in Oregon. Also ahead, space, the final frontier. We go there with hashtag VOA. And Taylor Swift blasts off with another hit. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. Seven U.S. Republican presidential candidates are set to debate again late Thursday, just a short time from now. But the party's leading 2016 contender, billionaire real estate mogul Donald Trump, is holding firm that he will boycott the event to protest inclusion of a debate moderator he contends has treated him unfairly. The network refused to replace moderator Megyn Kelly, who angered Trump at an August debate by asking him about denigrating slurs that he's made over the years about women. The Fox News network said the flamboyant Trump, a political novice who has surged to the top of political surveys of Republican voters, is still welcome at the debate and would be treated fairly. With the unpredictable Trump at the center of attention, the Republican presidential debates have become must-see television for millions of people here in the United States. It's being held in Des Moines, Iowa, the farm state where the first voting in the lengthy U.S. presidential campaign is set for Monday. Iowa is where VOA's Catherine Gibson joins us from. Catherine, where are you?
I'm in Des Moines right now. And so we are seeing Drake University and a lot of university students here in Des Moines. So that's adding to some of the excitement here in the lead up to the caucus.
Who are some of the candidates that you have seen running around there so far? Or are they fanned out across the state at this point?
They were fanning out across the state in the days leading up to the debate tonight. And now today, they've been pretty locked down in terms of events. There haven't been too many because they're all prepping for the big Fox debate tonight.
An interesting debate because Donald Trump has decided not to participate. He's going to have his own event while this debate is going on, but certainly the debate is going to be about Trump. You can't avoid him.
You definitely cannot avoid Trump. He comes up in every discussion that you have here in Des Moines, whether you're talking about Sanders and Hillary Clinton or the Republican field. Trump dominates the discussion.
And that's another interesting race among the Democrats, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. Bernie Sanders doing quite well in the polls in the lead up to this.
That's right. I was at a mock caucus event at a university. So the students were kind of running through what caucus night will be like on Monday. So some of these students who are able to vote for the first time in this election cycle learn what it's all about. And there was certainly a huge amount of excitement for Bernie Sanders amongst the students. And I believe he ended up winning their mock caucus.
There is a difference for our listeners out there between just going to the polls and voting and a caucus. Iowa's a little bit different from the rest of the country, and we'll tell them a little bit about what a caucus is.
Sure. It's different on the Republican and the Democratic presidential field. On the Republican side, you're able to vote by secret ballot. So you write down who you're caucusing for, who you're voting for, which presidential candidate, and then they tally up the vote. The Democrats are a little bit more vocal and exciting. You actually have to physically stand. You vote with your body by standing in the area for the presidential candidate, the Democratic presidential candidate. They count up. You have to make sure that you have enough bodies. There's a certain number you have to add up to in order to be viable. And then you get another chance, and if one side isn't viable, then all of those people can move over to another candidate's side. And so there are a couple of different rounds of this before eventually the delegates are elected for the Democrats. And it can be quite exciting.
Absolutely. It's not like you're just going out and voting at some point in the day when you can fit it in. They all actually have to show up at night in a location to do this
That's very right. That's very right. And, you know, you interact with your neighbors and your friends and your community.
It should be very interesting to see how all of this plays out. Again, the first real test for these candidates among the voters in this presidential primary race, and that, of course, will lead up to the conventions when a party nominee is selected. But Catherine Gibson is right there, and no matter what circle you're standing in, we're glad to have you with us and tell us about what's going on.
Thank you so much. Glad to be with you.
Well, let's see what's happening with the leading presidential candidates from both parties on their social media platforms today. Michael Lippin's right here in Studio 22 with more on that. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Jim. Thank you. Well, let's start with Donald Trump, the Republican frontrunner. He tweeted this message a few hours ago. He says, "It is my great honor to support our veterans with you. You can join me. Thank you. Hashtag Trump for Vets." And of course, he is promoting his rival event to the GOP debate, which is an event in support of American military veterans. And he also retweeted a message from one of his supporters, something Donald Trump loves to do. This supporter's handle is at GMoneyRainmaker. And that Twitter user said, "I hope CNN has enough bandwidth tonight because not many people will be watching the Fox News debate. I'm watching Trump tonight." Well, one person who actually does want people to watch the GOP debate is Ted Cruz. That's Trump's main rival. Ted Cruz had this message on Twitter a short time ago. He said, "Retweet if you're tuning in to tonight's GOP debate." Cruz is also trying to make the most of Trump skipping the contest, and Cruz is promoting a new hashtag called Ducking Donald. Now, in American English, when you say someone is ducking something, you're saying they're trying to avoid some kind of challenge, perhaps because they're afraid of it. Well, earlier Thursday, Cruz also sent out this Twitter post: "Going to tonight's GOP debate? Look for this Ducking Donald Snapchat filter." And what that filter is, it's a graphic of a yellow duck made to look like Trump, even with Trump's trademark hairstyle. And Cruz is already using that filter on his Snapchat account, and he's encouraging other people to do the same.
Well, let's take a look at the Democrats. What are they saying on Twitter today?
Well, the Democrats tweet every day. Here's a post from Bernie Sanders. He said, "People should not underestimate us. Let's rock the boat. Hashtag IA caucus." IA is an abbreviation for Iowa. And this is a tweet from Hillary Clinton. She's focusing on South Carolina, where she has a lot more support than in Iowa. And she tweeted a post from a supporter's account who says, "30 days to primary day in South Carolina. Commit to vote for Hillary Clinton." Back to you, Jim.
Exciting times in the political arena. Thanks so much for checking that out. Michael Lippin, you can follow him on Twitter at Michael_Lippin. And our main account for International Edition at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This is VOA's International Edition. My, how time flies when you're flying over the Earth. American astronaut Scott Kelly and Russian cosmonaut Mikhail Kornienko have spent almost a year in space at the International Space Station. This week's hashtag VOA TV program features clips from VOA's recent interview with Kelly and Kornienko, as well as a lively discussion about their physical endurance challenges and the prospects for further cooperation between the United States and Russia in space. Hashtag VOA host happens to be Michael Lippin. He's still here in the studio. Michael, who did you have on the program?
Yeah, I didn't go anywhere, but in the studio for hashtag VOA this week was David Grinspoon. He is a senior scientist at the Planetary Science Institute. And via Skype from Moscow, we had Matthew Bodner, who is a space correspondent for the Moscow Times newspaper. Now, during the show, we talked a lot about the decades-long history of U.S. and Russian space cooperation, and I asked Bodner how that cooperation is now taking place, not just on the space station with Kornienko and Kelly, but right here on Earth as well.
They have a very interesting and deep relationship. A lot of that is to do with personnel exchange. For example, NASA has people deployed, around like 30 or 40 people here in Moscow at any given time, at several locations owned by the Russian Space Agency. And the Russian Space Agency has people in Houston as well. And so they interface on the working level on a daily basis, recurring contact with a very clear goal. And the message here is that what strengthens bilateral relations, and it really only happened in space, is daily meaningful contact. And they're really the only set of government officials that you can see that don't publicly sometimes have spats. And I'm sure in other areas they don't do it as well, like nuclear security. But there's a great effort from both sides to keep things cordial and professional, and just keep the eyes on the mission. And that's been going on for 15 years through several political crises. And it weathered the most recent one, which has definitely been the most dramatic since the end of the Cold War. So they've definitely right. got a very so, deep so and meaningful relationship.
Right, so they're getting along very well. And I wanted to ask David Grinspoon, how do you see U.S. and Russian space cooperation going into the future?
Well, from the scientists' side of it, not the diplomats necessarily or even the engineers, but the scientists themselves, which is my role, it always has just made so much sense to find a way to work together, because science is inherently international. Even during the Cold War, when the U.S. and the Soviets had our separate programs to try to send missions to Mars and missions to Venus, the scientists were, you know, trying to find ways to cooperate and send each other data, because we wanted their Venus probes to work. They wanted our Venus probes to work, because it's all Earth trying to find out about Venus.
So there's on their own, right?
Right. There's a certain way in which the knowledge itself and the questions we're driven to answer don't respect any kind of borders and any kind of national identity. So I think the science will always be a force acting to try to overcome whatever boundaries get imposed by these other very real human, you know, foibles.
Well, you can see the full half-hour program on Facebook. It's on our hashtag VOA Facebook page, and we'd love to hear your thoughts about the program. Back to you, Jim.
Great. Thank you so much, Michael. Ammon Bundy, leader of a three-week civilian occupation of a federal wildlife refuge, seen as a protest against what is perceived as government encroachment on the rights of private citizens, has called on the remaining occupiers to leave that remote Oregon site and go home. Bundy was also involved in a 2014 standoff. He was taken into custody along with seven others Tuesday after their vehicles were stopped by federal agents and state police. In a shootout, one of the protesters was killed. B.J. Soper, a member of the Private Pacific Patriot Network, spoke with reporters Wednesday.
They're terrified. They don't know what to do. They're terrified. I would ask them to go home. I want them to go home to their families. I don't want any more deaths, any more bloodshed. There's no reason to be a martyr in this.
The occupation of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge in Harney County, Oregon, began January 2nd after two ranchers were arrested, tried, and convicted of setting fires that had spread to federal lands. It was part of a decades-old feud over federal control of millions of hectares of land in the U.S. West. While authorities took an initial relaxed approach to the occupation, roadblocks have recently been erected around the nature preserve. They say the remaining protesters could leave, but not before being identified. Luke Hamill of the Oregonian newspaper spoke with VOA's Victor Beatty about the protest.
A bunch of out-of-state protesters, at least two of them are sons of Cliven Bundy, who became sort of a household name in 2014 when there was a standoff at his Nevada ranch. Their position is that the federal government has too much power and that land should be turned over to counties and local ranchers. So Ammon Bundy and a bunch of militants came in and occupied this refuge building outside of Burns, Oregon.
Law enforcement has kind of taken a fairly easy attitude up until just this week when it turned somewhat violent.
For 3.5 weeks, the situation was like a wait-and-see approach from the federal law enforcement response. The reason was because there were no hostages taken. The situation was generally not threatening, even though that there were weapons around. Besides the occasional demonstration, their ability to draw weapons, it really was never a super dangerous situation out there. So the feds were sort of, I think, at first content to sit back and wait. But local and state officials grew impatient, and so did the community. When the group attempted to leave the county, the FBI and state police stopped them in the National Forest on their way to Grant County. There was some gunfire, and one of the militants, Lavoie Finicum, is now dead, and Ammon Bundy and his affiliates were arrested, and now they're in Portland in Multnomah County Jail.
Can you tell our listeners, Luke, exactly how large this group is? Is this widespread sentiment in the western part of the United States?
In the rural West, I think that there is a very large contingent of people who do feel that the federal government reaches too far, that environmental regulations and animal rights regulations have hurt these economies. That is the position that these people take. Harney County, Oregon in particular, where I am, has been hit especially hard by the decline of the logging industry, for instance. And so they think that they should be able to use this land however they want. Now, on the other side, of environmentalists and animal rights activists will give you a whole list of reasons why the land should be managed by the federal government.
But then again, the federal government does control a lot of land in many of those western states.
Yeah, in Harney County, I think the number is 77% of the land. And Harney County is very small in terms of population. It's only about 7,000 people, but it's huge in terms of geography. It's, I think, similar to the state of Massachusetts. It's bigger than the state of Maryland. So we're talking about a huge area that the federal government controls.
And that debate will likely continue for some time. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that afflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Here's a big surprise. Taylor Swift has yet another musical hit on her hands. Border Crossings host Larry London and VOA's Susan Yaki talk about it.
This is the album that defied her record company's recommendation. The 1989 album was recorded against their best wishes. They said it's not a good idea to go from country to pop and abandon your country fans. It probably won't work. But Taylor Swift said, I think it will. And she was right. So now she has her sixth hit from the 1989 album, which is her fifth album and her first to be an all pop album.
You know those horror movies where somebody makes a pact with the devil to get something and then it turns around and bites them in the end? It's just incredible how her career has been so tremendous.
Well, when you talk about incredible accomplishments, Taylor Swift is the second most charting artist on the Hot 100 pop chart, just behind Aretha Franklin.
Wow.
Taylor Swift has had 61 songs make it to the pop charts in her career.
And she's still young.
And she's very young, and Aretha has had 73. And Taylor's, as I say, still going strong, only five albums, and she just finished her world tour, which, you know, these tours for Taylor last at least a year, sometimes 2 years. So she works very hard for the money, to quote the lyrics of a famous song. And she's done very, very well. They love her around the world. The song, Out of the Woods, is the new song. A lot of people believe, well, the lyrics might have been inspired by her short relationship with Harry Styles from the group One Direction, although she's not willing to confirm that.
Well, let's hear a little bit of the song.
Okay, sounds good to me.
We're lying on your couch. I remember.
So, Larry, you were talking about her career and how she's on the road a lot. Is this going to be one of those cases where she might regret missing some of her youth by working so hard all the time?
Not at all. Taylor is to coin a phrase, a workaholic. She works very hard. She feeds on work. You know, you got to keep in mind, Susan, the fact that Taylor grew up as an outcast. She was the kid at school no one wanted to play with. No one wanted her on their team. No one liked her. And the family even had to move to another state to get out of that rut that they were in, that she was in. And look at her now. Everybody wants a piece of Taylor Swift. She's loving it. This is quite a refreshing change from the way she grew up.
I guess those kids are pretty sorry they behave that way now.
I'll bet you they are. Look at me now, Taylor Swift.
Okay, thank you, Larry, for coming by. I always appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Susan.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com, that's our website, and also on Twitter, at @VOA_IE. Well, while Taylor Swift may not have been the most popular growing up, we have the most popular director and engineer, Tracy Carter and Zena Bobdell-Rockman. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Thanks so much for spending part of your day with us. Have a great one.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Ambassador to Guinea Dennis Hankins and U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, Mission Director Michelle Godet, along with United Nations World Food Program, or WFP, Country Representative Elizabeth Farr, and Government of Guinea representatives, visited a Food for Peace school meal site in Bokay, Guinea, in late January. As part of the U.S. government's effort to support the economic recovery of Guinea in the aftermath of the Ebola virus disease in March 2015, the U.S. government, through USAID, provided $7.1 million as part of its cooperative program with the World Food Program. As a result, WFP made its largest ever purchase of locally produced rice, supporting local agricultural production and providing children with meals in 710 schools across Guinea. Through the program, 1,258 metric tons of locally produced parboiled rice was purchased from four providers in Nzekure, Bokay, and Conakry. Local purchases help build agricultural markets for locally produced rice and support long-term food security. Additionally, farmers learn about the tendering process, how to bid for contracts, how to work with development partners, and are able to build relationships with banks in order to access extended credit at favorable rates. The Emergency School Feeding Program works in areas most affected by Ebola, providing daily hot meals to school children and take-home rations of vegetable oil to girls. The goals of the program are twofold: to meet emergency food security needs and to incentivize parents to send their children, especially girls, back to recently reopened schools. The United States is proud to work with Guinea and its international partners to give Guinea school children the food assistance they need to play their part in building a prosperous future for Guinea and the region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
January.